Hello world and welcome to the Wolfstead today. Wherever you might be, we're here and we're glad you're along with us. Ladies and gentlemen, in the Wolfstead today, now please, for any of our European listeners, if I get this wrong, you can tell me what it is. I don't know. Today we have Olsang, I'm going to say, into the studio, and that's Anna and... Please, I don't want to...
Djokovic.
Okay, and Alex Boyd. Now, yeah. With a name like that, you're not from Nova Scotia, or maybe you are from Nova Scotia originally.
No, so my family is from, like, former Yugoslavia.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm, like, Serbian and Croatian ethnically, and I was born in Croatia, and we moved here when I was 5 because my uncle was in... He was in the Canadian Forces, and he was doing peacekeeping over there during the Civil War.
Yeah.
And so my aunt, my dad's sister, they got married, they moved to Canada, and then later when things were happening with the war and we moved, we already had someone in Nova Scotia. Okay. So they were able to sponsor us for us to come here.
Nice. Yeah. Well, we're glad they did. Welcome to Canada. And your partner is Alex Boyd.
Hi.
How you doing, Alex?
I'm pretty well. Yourself?
I'm doing just fine. Now, so you guys have been long-term friends, all right? And you live in the Halifax-Dartmouth area.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you both had the same kind of love for the same kind of music. And basically, a lot of it post-industrial?
More so Alex, I would
yeah,
say.
Neo-folk itself, I guess, would be a post-industrial subgenre. But we've kind of, you know, really got into the same stuff over a lot of extreme, like, metal. Black metal and stuff like that.
Okay. So, yeah. And now there's a lot of people out there that really don't understand, you know. I mean, like we were talking before we started here, I mean, when I first heard about this, when it was first mentioned to me, I was expecting more on the heavy metal side.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, but I had never really, and I guess it's not that really that well-known neo-folk, and that's not really that well-known here, is it?
I would say no.
Yeah, no. Now, you would certainly have people who would be fans of sort of a lot of those offshoots in some capacity, but it's not, there's certainly no scene.
Yeah, so that's where the black metal is. That's like a subgenre of this metal, of this type of music, is it? Or
well, black metal would be closer, I guess, to when you were talking about death metal earlier. It's a fast, kind of originally punk-influenced, very DIY and very raw form of heavy metal music. It tends to be pretty kind of built from the ground up, I guess. It has a lot of anti-establishment type leanings to it, I suppose. So that's where that comes in.
But now you guys are more like, let's just sit down and chill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, your style of music, I mean, we talked about this just before we came on air as well. Is the first time I heard you guys, I was expecting something totally different than what was put in front of me. And I like I said, you know, for Dana, for the first couple of minutes, I was like, okay, when's it going to start? When's it going to start? Because I was expecting at some point that I was going to be getting some form of a heavy metal here.
Mm.
What I got was very rhythmic chanting, undertones of country music, with layers of rock put over that, with a little slice of like operatic classical music laid in there, with the chanting and with water.
Yeah.
So I mean, you guys have taken all the good things in life, put them in a little basket here.
Yeah, I guess that's awesome to know.
Glowing review, I guess.
Yeah, I think like where we both liked black metal, and then there's the other genre of neo-folk, which is more like, and with neo-folk, there's also dark folk, which is almost like more laid back.
Yeah, a little more neoclassical in a sense.
Yeah, like more neoclassical, traditional folk.
I guess
those genres are all sort of, like with black metal, especially dark folk, they're very like nature oriented. So I like to put like the samples of like, you know, like wind or like water or something to help kind of create that vision.
Well, your music, like the Hunt for it, for me was the first song that I listened to, and for me, that took me that really did take me into the woods.
Well, that's good.
I mean, like I said, I think the one thing that I can, that keeps going over and over in my mind is that your music is so relaxing, but it's so multi-layered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to listen to it, you would think, really, that there would be, you know, a whole lot more people involved than just two people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's because, like, traditionally, when people used to record, like really analog and live, that was more common. But now that you can just create a bunch of tracks and lay them all separately, and it makes it a lot easier to... You know, there's people who have, like, one-man bands, and they do everything. They do drums, and so we kind of do that, where we just, like, maybe lay a main riff, and then, like, okay, let's harmonize this, let's add some of this in the background, maybe, you know, then finish it off with, like, some nature sounds or something. So I think, like, in the end, it starts off, like, it starts off really kind of basic, and then once you build it up, you know, you get something that's...
So does the idea grow as it grows, or is it already preconceived ahead of time and then you just layer it all in?
It kind of depends. Like,
I say kind of both.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the nice parts about what we have available to us for, you know, a software and basic studio gear and things like that, is that it does kind of give you the freedom to build something very large with very little to begin with, right? We don't have to assemble a large band of touring players, so there's less, I guess, of that kind of interpersonal conflict in what we're going for. So a lot of the time, like, if I'm working on guitars for a new track, for example, I may spend quite a bit of time building what I, in the end, would consider a full song. It'll start with a couple of riffs, I'll build it out until I get it roughly where I want, and that will comprise a full bass guitar track. And when I sit down and record that, I'll sit and I'll, until I get that whole piece out, that's the main beginning part of the recording process. A lot of that harmonization, a lot of those things that fill out the sound and kind of speak back and forth with each other, I will build those around what that bass melody might have been for a track. So I guess, like, you had asked me before sort of what maybe prompts some of that building, that sound, and I guess way back, you know, when we kind of first started working on a few songs here and there, I don't know why I was listening to a lot of contemporary piano music, I guess, at the time, but I thought it would be interesting to try to write guitar pieces, but as if they were played on a piano. So there was a lot of taking a bass. I can't play a piano. I don't know the first thing about playing it, but I like the way that piano lines tend to speak back and forth with each other. And there was a lot of trying to emulate that sort of feeling with guitars, I guess, which is where a lot of that comes from.
So is that where your beginning comes from, is back from guitar? Like, when did you first start playing music?
I actually started playing music fairly young. I was in, like, band in school.
So was there music at home, or was
But my we were actually talking about this earlier too. I just got my dad and, you know, my brother and my mom into guitar. They all got on it in the last year. But my parents were always musical people, like, as listeners.
Okay.
So I grew up hearing a lot of music. My dad was a weird hipster like I am, in the sense that he didn't like any mainstream shit when he was growing up. He was into punk. He has all the old, like, punk vinyls and all that weird post-punk stuff that kind of came out of that. So there was a lot of old goth things.
Okay,
like, a lot of this sort of
right.
weird left-to-center stuff that I wasn't, you know, I wouldn't hear it in my friends' parents' houses necessarily, but there was always a lot of that, so I just had an interest in music. And I played in band as a kid. I played clarinet, saxophone, and I didn't get a guitar till I was maybe 14 or 15.
And now, was that in the metro area? Did you grow up here?
Mostly. I lived in Ontario a couple of times when I was young, but for most, from about 10 or 11 on, I've been predominantly in Nova Scotia.
Okay.
Yeah.
now, Anna, you say you came here as a young child, and and did you grow up in the metro area as well?
Yeah, I've been basically in Dartmouth ever since.
Okay. Oh, on the dark side. Yeah. Oh, okay.
But yeah.
You're out in Spry Town now, you know.
Yeah.
So now, same thing, was music a part of your family, a part of your life? Or?
Not really. I would say that my grandpa was musical. He played like the accordion or harmonica, we say.
Yeah.
So it's got like piano keys on one side and then the buttons on the other side.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of the ones you find now, they're buttons on both sides. It took forever for him to find one like that here, whereas they're really common back home.
Cause... Yeah, Newfoundland had keys and buttons.
Yeah, because I guess back in like Yugoslavia and a lot of Eastern Europe, that's like very traditional folk music with the accordions.
Yeah,
so
well, Newfoundland, there's a lot of Portuguese and that over there too. You know, and Greek and that. They used to come over fishing. So now, when did music bug bite you?
So kind of same thing. I think I started playing guitar when I was 13. And I also played in band in school. I started with clarinet, then I went to guitar. And then after playing guitar for a long time, maybe like 6 years ago now, maybe 5 years ago, I started playing bass as well. And then maybe 3 years ago, I started messing around with like synth and piano, but mostly like synthesizer stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because I couldn't play like a piano song. But I find the synthesizer stuff is a little bit easier to sort of figure out on your own.
Yeah, I got a young friend of mine that plays, what's it called? Theremin?
Oh, Theremin. I want one of those.
Yeah, and like, I mean, when he told me what it would do and everything, I was kind of like, yeah, we're talking Star Trek here, right? And he goes, exactly. Yeah. And then he got up on stage and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
So now, and what exactly brought you two guys together, like musically? Like, was it a gig or was it just, did you know each other besides or?
Yeah, I think we met in like 2007 or something.
Yeah, it's been quite a while. 2008. Yeah, 2007-2008, but yeah. I guess
we had a lot of mutual friends and stuff. And we both liked black metal a lot. And then when I got into neofolk and dark folk, like Alex was already kind of interested in that genre for a while before I was.
So it must be hard to go to a gig or go to an event where the genre is so small. There's not a lot of people that are playing it, or...
Yeah, no, like, I mean, around here, you wouldn't have gigs, really, for that sort of thing. You would for, like, Halifax has had a fairly well-established metal scene in some capacity for a lot of years. So you'll see the odd band that might technically qualify as black metal, but as far as, like, that dark folk thing goes, like, no.
Yeah.
And I guess that's... For us, I mean, when we got started, it's not like we were thinking, oh, we gotta go be part of a scene necessarily. We just wanted to see if we could make some music like that, because I don't think we knew anyone else really who was interested in that sound around here. So
to answer your question, yes, you can. So now, obviously, you have other day jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, like a lot of musicians say today, it pays the heart, but it doesn't pay the bills.
Yeah.
So now, is there a chance down the road that we may see you guys in a live show?
I think that's the goal eventually. Right now, it's pretty busy. Like, we were hoping to get, like, this summer to start working on, like, live sets and practicing and everything. Because what we were thinking of doing is to almost create like songs for a live set, so things that people haven't heard.
Yes.
And I know that we could have, like, you know, play back some audio of like certain guitar tracks and we could play the other instruments.
Well, yeah, I mean, if everybody else has got loopers and all that, there must be a program that you can use, you know. And I mean, and it would, I mean with the DJ scene and that, having recorded music today is no big deal.
Yeah, you so know? We could do that, or we could like think about making our own set, which I kind of like the idea of making your own set, but...
It's a cool idea.
Yeah, we're kind of open to both, I'd say.
I mean, admittedly, I think Anna is a lot more prepared to do live sets than I am. I've tried to play live, and I kind of approach a lot of what I do creatively with a probably not the healthiest approach, so it's very difficult for me to be in any way content with maybe what we're doing to begin with. So a big part of it for me is just not... If I don't feel like we have something I think that we'd be happy with anyway. Mm. It'd be very hard to do a shitty version of it for just to do it. I have a looper, but when we're recording, it's more...
Works a lot with a looper.
Yeah, I've seen... there are a lot of artists who use loopers phenomenally well in their live sets. Yeah. Owen Pallett, the guy who used to work with Arcade Fire, does a fantastic job with an electric violin and a loop pedal.
And there's a lot amazing. Of one-man and two-man, you know, where people... duos and that out there that are using loopers. Mm. I mean, it fills in a lot.
Yep.
I mean, for me, if you guys ever did a live show, I'd love to see it in like a theater setting.
Yeah, I think that's what we play.
And have the backdrops and that because it would be spectacular. But now, I'm kind of getting kind of the sense here that Alex, you're a little bit of a control freak, but you know what? And I don't say that in a bad way because musicians, a lot of musicians, you know, like that's one of the things they struggle with is that. No matter how many tracks they do or no matter how good they get it, they always wish it could be just a little bit better.
Yeah, you never quite get it. And I certainly have some... Honestly, outside of being very critical of my own contributions and where I want it to be, like I'm certainly not with... You know, when we're bringing everything together...
No, and I didn't mean in regards for you. I meant... Like, for you to be that way towards anybody else. I just meant for yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I know that I have a certain standard that things have to be done to, and if they're not done to that, then I'm really not happy.
Yeah.
Right? And it's very hard for me to just say, yeah, okay, I can deal with that. No. In the back of my head, there's a voice screaming, no!
Yeah, I know. It just sort of eats at the back of your head.
So now, when the process... Okay, so you've got the guitar tracks down, and then you've got your bass lines and that you want to come in. And then is that where you come in? Or, like, now, is this is this done together, or do you do it separately and then bring it together?
I think it depends on the track and, like... how far one of us are into recording a track. So, like, usually we don't sit down together and, like, record at the same time. It's usually, like, Alex will have a riff idea and he'll, like, record that, and then I'll have a riff idea for something and I'll record that. Or, you know, maybe we have some ideas that we do together, like, talk about, and then we try to record those.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's kind of done back and forth. I'd say that's the best way to put it together.
Historically, too, until recently, we lived in different areas geographically. So there was a lot of doing it remotely, right?
Wow.
So it kind of lent itself a lot more, I think, to some more, you know, singular vision, but then passing it back and forth to ensure that, because it's certainly much more collaborative in that sense, where, like, nothing really passes muster unless everyone's cool with it, right? Like, no one muscles their stuff in. It's... Whereas now we...
Like, if I record something, like a riff that Alex thinks would be better tweaked, like, I'm open to fixing it and vice versa for him.
Yeah.
But, usually it'd be like, you know, I'll record at home on my, like, digital kind of, like, audio workstation or whatever, and then he'll record on his. And then we kind of, like, swap stuff back and forth and, like, put them together, see how they sound like together and if they go well together, that kind of thing.
That's the way it is. Okay. Yeah. like, you know, like long distance collaboration. I mean, I know a lot of people that do it, songwriting and stuff like that, but I mean, I'm trying to get my head here where you guys are on the same page melodically. You know, I mean, that says an enormous amount about your creativity that the both of you have.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is about sharing sort of the same vision and having the same or very similar, like, musical influences. So we both know what the other person would probably think sounds nice because I would think it sounds nice. So yeah. Usually if I like the riff, like, Alex will like the riff, and if he likes the riff, usually I'll like the riff. And I think, too, if Alex sends me a riff to, like, record over or vice versa, like, each of us will listen to that riff over and over and over again while screwing around on, like, the guitar or the bass or the synth or whatever.
Okay.
Or, like, with vocals.
Yeah, so you're getting basically, without being in the same room talking to each other, you're getting a feel for what the other person was thinking when they put that together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, yeah.
And it's, I think, a benefit, too. Like, the way that we do it, or certainly what technology now will allow you to do, is nothing's really etched in stone, right? Like, we can, certainly when we were not in the same geographic area, I mean, you can build and you can pass stuff back and forth, and you're not wasting studio time or money either, right? You can basically, you can do whatever the hell you want with it between the two of you until you're largely happy with what you have, and it's not, other than the time commitment, it's not breaking the bank.
And then obviously you have the software to put all this together, so does that also mean that you can have the software to put your own CD together so that it reduces your costs as well, or?
Unfortunately, no.
Yeah, no, not so much.
I would know. I've never done that. But usually with the label, it's kind of nice where our label, right now it's Nordvis, and he lives, Andreas lives in Sweden. But usually with all the labels that we've worked with, like, they'll make the physical copies for you, give you a percentage of them to sell, and then they'll keep a percentage, but that way you're not paying
to make
a physical.
Okay.
We're not out the upfront cost.
Yeah, because, I mean, the payoff might be good if we sell out completely or whatever, but if we don't, then we put all that money into production that we might never get back.
We may never get back.
So the label kind of takes that risk, but then in turn, they kind of own sort of the rights to reproduce our music for a certain amount of time or whatever.
Yeah.
Or they get the biggest percentage cut.
Yeah, they would get the biggest percentage cut.
But now, and how long have you had that deal?
Just since this most recent one, we're on with Nordvis, it's a two album. And I think it's like, for those specific ones that we do for the label, it's like reproduction rights for a certain number of years. We get paid.
We've probably been with them for like a year and a bit now.
Yeah.
And where is the large audience, the largest audience that's listening to this? Where would they be found geographically?
Definitely by sales USA.
Surprisingly.
Is that right?
There is a lot in Europe, too, and Canada, but definitely, for, like, sheer numbers, USA.
Okay, yeah.
And I think that's just because they have the sheer population and, like...
Well, that's it.
And they have a lot of music down there of every kind, so they're used to listening and finding, like, so many different genres and stuff.
And as we found, we're very, very happy to be part of a place called Hidden Gems Broadcasting, mm-hmm. An internet station that's run out of New Brunswick, and... their listenership is worldwide, and a lot of it's in the United States, and a lot of it's in England. Mm-hmm. A couple of weeks ago, we got a lot of hits from Germany and from France.
Oh, cool.
You know, so...
I would say ours is similar with our audience. Yeah. A lot of Europe.
Well, I mean, and the internet is a beautiful thing because it's opened the world up to a world of, you know, stuff you'd never would have heard before.
Yeah.
And especially now where, you know, at one time, the only way you were going to get heard is if you went and got recorded.
Yeah.
And now you can sit in front of your iPhone with the camera and the microphone that's on that, and you can sing a song and put it on YouTube and the whole world can see you.
Yeah. Yeah, YouTube has helped a lot, and Bandcamp as, like, websites for getting our stuff out there, and Facebook too, having a Facebook page. So that's helped a lot for, like, getting exposure. And I think just like our album art helped attract people too, because people really liked how it looked, and my friend Andrew did that.
Yeah, I think the album or the CD jacket for this is perfect because of the intricacies of it. Mm. You could look at this cover all day long and you would not see everything that's in it.
Mm.
And it's the same as your music. I can listen to it all day, and every time I listen to the same song again, I hear something that I didn't hear the last time.
Oh, that's
thank
cool.
You. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, thank you.
For me, the depth of this CD, okay, is for me is just phenomenal, because it really and truly is. It's like, and I don't want to diminish it by using food as a acronym here, but
it's okay. We like food.
It's like digging into a great big bowl of nachos, you know. You don't know if you're getting a jalapeno or if you're just getting cheese, yeah. You know, or if there's some meat in there or what's going on. But it's all together.
Yeah.
You know, everything, it's like the cheese puts it all and sticks it all together. Well, the end production here, everything just blends so well. And I challenge people to please, please, please pick up a copy of the CD. And sit down and really, really, really listen to it.
Thanks.
Because it is amazing. I can say one thing. I think both of your minds are very busy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to beat them into submission sometimes.
Yeah.
But there's got to be a lot going on.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I have ADHD, so that's probably
well,
that's one part of it.
You know, well, I mean... Yeah. You know, mental illness is a great friend to musicians.
Yeah, it's true.
We got a big rant about that inside the booklet on that one. So it's,
yeah.
I mean, I think we have our own struggles for sure in that sense. So it's, you know, we're both weird, sad people.
Join the club, brother. Yeah. I'm 15 years alive, so, you know, I've been down that road, yeah. But... And what brought me back out of it was music, you know?
Yeah, I find it's always something you can return to. And I've always liked genres that have, like, evoke, like, an emotional response in me, mm-hmm. not just something that I think is nice.
Yeah.
And I think that's another reason why we kind of went the route we did with our influences, is because both of us have, like, more so emotional connections to, like, stuff like black metal and neo-folk and dark folk rather than, like, I like death metal, but I've never really had, like, an emotional response.
No, it's
more so, like... It sounds really awesome and, you know, it's really technically impressive and stuff,
yeah.
But I haven't had as much of, like, a connection to it aside from enjoying the music itself. So
yeah.
I find with black metal and neo folk and dark folk, I feel like I can almost, like, see the music. You can almost, like, kind of, like, visualize.
Yeah, yeah, like, it's very, like, atmosphere has always been really important for me, which I guess is why, you know, I trended more to, even in the metal world, something like black metal over other ones, is it tends to value, like, a sense of place.
Yeah, like, and like a certain aesthetic.
And an aesthetic, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the most technically executed, but it's more about how effectively it evokes that emotion.
Mm.
And, you know, a lot of, even when we were talking about some of that weird post-industrial stuff I used to listen to more so, it's the emotion in that for something that's typically immensely poorly executed on a technical level. But when it really effectively captures the sort of intensity of the emotion that it's supposed to convey, it's that's
but you like
connect with that.
But punk and grunge, I mean,
yeah,
come
absolutely,
on.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of punk and grunge bands out there that were absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
Right? But everybody loved them because it wasn't anything else except their stage presence and their message.
It's how effectively they deliver it. And
exactly.
Like with those genres, something like black metal, I mean, it's very easy once it gathers a degree of steam in the cultural lexicon to kind of get diluted by people who are trying to capture the sound but do a poor job of effectively translating the feeling.
Yeah.
And I think when you're, you know, when you somebody who connects with that kind of stuff on an emotional level, it, you can tell pretty easily. So
this isn't sitting down, writing a form, using a formula to put something inside of a box for X amount of seconds.
Yeah.
Okay, this is real. Okay, this is real emotion. This is real thought. Okay, this is, I mean, this is as bare as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because obviously there's overtones here of emotions that when some of this stuff was done and made, there was emotions that went with it.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Some of it may have been happiness. Some of it may have been anger. But if a person listens long enough, maybe you can pick out some of those spots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that a lot of the feedback we've had from people who like us, like, you know, more than average or whatever, but let's say we're one of the bands they listen to like regularly, they tend to mention that they have like an actual like attachment to the music with like a feeling or something.
Yeah.
Or helping them get through a hard time, or when they're feeling down they can listen to it and feel better.
I gotta tell you, when I'm stressed, I just go to the internet there and just turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there's all kinds of excellent music on here. I love this whole CD, The Run, The Gloom, The Truth, all of it. The Trial. The Dance, The End, all of them were good. But The Hunt, for me, was the first song that I listened to. And that was the one that, for me, that drew me in the deepest. Like I really, like I said to you earlier, I really felt like I was in the middle of the woods.
Mm.
And when I'm stressed, music really calms me down.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's probably one of my favorites.
The songs on it?
Yeah. The Hunt, like I like that one a lot from a stepping outside of it perspective. We tried to get that one on the first record and it just didn't.
So yeah. This is your second CD and now you've got another in the works, is that correct?
Eventually we will.
Yeah. Oh, we just finished we're going to be on a Bathory tribute compilation.
Okay.
Bathory's a old originator of, I guess, that second wave black metal sound.
And like Viking metal.
Viking metal and so some of that Viking folk metal type stuff. And one of the labels that we're on, the guy who does our cassettes, Folkvanger Records out of the U.S., he's got a lot of really great contemporary metal acts and stuff on his label now. And somebody pitched the idea of doing a label-based Bathory compilation, and he reached out to us. And, you know, after some hemming and hawing, I guess, we did kind of put something together. It's kind of like being asked to contribute a track to a Beatles tribute. You sort of got to do it, but we thought it would be neat because we took, you know, we're going to be on compilation with a lot of black metal bands who are doing their interpretation of what are traditional black metal songs. Whereas we do this weird acoustic thing, so we thought it would be neat to take one and kind of rearrange it and build it as an acoustically driven track while still kind of staying true to, you know,
what
the sound
you do
of the original song.
Yeah. So
that'll
it's not like it's not done with electric guitars or anything like the original track was. Like no real drums, I don't think, on it.
Okay,
we rearranged most of the guitar line.
You've introduced me to some lines of music tonight that I've never heard of, like Viking folk. I've never, we've got to check that out, JW.
probably like Truna.
I got my brother there. He'll be my sound and board, ain't Clifford. But yeah, like do you know? I honestly see, like, for me, a fantasy movie or something like that, I can see this being the soundtrack for it.
Yeah.
I really can. Like, you know, I they should have had it in The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you guys know people, it is weird. Yeah. Like, it's one of those things that I don't, not to, like, toot our horn or whatever, but we have heard from a handful of people who are like, oh, you should try get it in Vikings or get it in a video game or something. And it's like, look, man, if you guys got contact, like, I can't just go email...
Well,
Mr. Vikings would be like, yo, here, listen to our shit.
But Dartmouth, we never went to Dartmouth.
He does. It's great now because there's all kinds of nice new bars and stuff that have opened.
Dartmouth, you know what?
Awesome.
Yeah,
especially downtown Dartmouth.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
You know, and if you like pastries and that, there's a little place here called the Humble Pie.
We
awesome.
Go there.
Yeah, no, there's an excellent singer that works here, a lady by the name of Jen Miller.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, her and her man, Quentin, they play together as a duo. But Jen was the very first person that was on the Wolf's Den 4 years ago.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah.
Well, they make good pies there, too.
So. Yeah, they do.
They do.
And they're going to start to make cheesecakes.
Last of many talents.
Oh, I didn't know.
I love their steak. their steak pie there is just delicious. Yeah, and my wife had the chicken cranberry. It was
great.
The chicken pies are pretty awesome.
I don't think I've had a bad one from there.
I want to thank you so much for stopping in the Wolf's Den today. It's
been
a real pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having us here.
And thank you so much for the music. And ladies and gentlemen, Ulvesang. Give it a try. It's Ulvesang. Go online, check it out, find out how to buy a CD. You are going to want one. You are not going to want to rely on the internet to be able to only people to give you this music. You're going to want a hard copy. So again, guys, thanks so much for coming in. How can people find you if they'd like to talk to you?
They can find us on Facebook.
Okay.
Search Ulvesang. They can also contact us through there if they want some.
All right.
LPs or CD. We still got a few around. So
okay.
And probably through Bandcamp, too.
And through Bandcamp. Well. All right.
Yeah.
They can check that out. And I'd say, where are we going to see you? But I guess we'll just see you when we see you. But we're going to hear you.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Again, thanks so much for stopping in. I wish you all the best. I really hope that at some point you do put a live show together. Mm. And do me a favor. If you do, save the first seat for me.
I want the
first ticket, okay, for the live show. And again, thanks for stopping in. And ladies and gentlemen, as we always say here on the Lake Wolf's Den, please, please be nice to one another. Be kind. And always, always, always hug the ones you love.